that is old LGO.
Radio. You're tuned in live this Monday, August 27th, 2018. on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. Wild and dystopic, un-American, patently un-American ride. It is lately. Man, it would be great if we could sort of, I don't know, turn the hands of time back in certain ways. I'm going to take a little different tact today. After Friday's broadcast, after Fred's call, Fred in Michigan's call specifically on Friday, something clicked for whatever reason. I've been asked for years, what do you think about military service? You know, when someone is considering military service, or a child, a loved one is considering military service, I get asked the question, you know, what do you think? Obviously, your perspective on things is different. Yes, I suppose it is. Different is a relative term, I guess. But I've always sort of been at a loss. I've always felt at a loss when asked about military service. How to amply convey the voluminous concepts, you know what I'm talking about, from the warnings of history and the founders, the founding friends, of, as Jim in Illinois would say, to what bad guys have written and done for that matter in contravention to the to those warnings, to the present day evidence proving those warnings wise and prudent, and effectively outing said bad guys, you know, and a certain someone passed away over the weekend. We'll come back to that. Anyway, all that and much more. How does one effectively articulate and impart such vast concepts, particularly to a people who've been scientifically, you know, cybernetically and technocratically engineered to be incapable of having an attention span, for starters, or receiving the message, even if they could? And it's really fascinating when you look at the ways that people have been dumbed down, the way that, you know, Bernaysian style, Edward Bernays, Bernaysian style Madison Avenue marketing has been a part of social engineering to the Skinner box and operant conditioning in so-called schools. That's really what it is. You know, parents, if you don't know what operant conditioning is, you need to look into that. And then every lesson plan that you see little Johnny and Sally getting, you will clearly see folds into the operant conditioning model. In other words, it's just behavior modification. It's behavior engineering. And so, you know, as Alan Watt has said over the years, this concept of linguistic minimalism, or Orwellian linguistic minimalism, and, you know, what I call the hieroglyphics effect. We have all of these signs and symbols. People talk about how branding wasn't that big a deal 50, 60, 70 years ago. It was a thing, not nearly what it is today. And so now we have all of these, what I would call hieroglyphics, these symbols that communicate messages to people. Everyone knows what the message says because millions and millions of dollars are being spent on that message. But so that's being droned into people's ears constantly, or their eyes and ears. But people are incapable of communicating. It's fascinating. And there's all kinds of duplicity and sophistry at work in advertising. I've mentioned the book, Carl P. Reiter's book, I Can Sell You Anything. Stop That Ripoff. Start Saving Money Today, The Consumer's Guide to the Ad Game That Costs You Plenty. And inside the front cover are these words: a U.S. president was sold to the American public as a product. Now, when was this book published? 1972. A U.S. president was sold, quote unquote, to the American public as a product. Why? Because whether you think you're immune to it or not, advertising works. Advertising tells you what to buy, how to buy, why to buy, and any particular brand or product. But once you know how and why it works, you can stop getting suckered and start spending your money on what you really want. But buying a president isn't necessarily, you know, spending your money on what you want. Anyway, renegade ad man Carl P. Ryder names names, debunks claims, and tells you everything you need to know to beat the ad game in a no-holds-barred book that you can profit from for the rest of your life. But the point here is he talks about weasel words, as he calls them. Chapter 2, Weasel Words, God's Little Helpers, which is sort of an odd title, but he talks about the duplicity and the sophistry of ad campaigns. Words that, you know, number one, words that mean things they really don't mean. Help. And he goes through help, and I love it because I've been saying this for years. Help is not help if it doesn't help. If I don't feel helped, then, sir, please stop resisting. We're trying to help you. That doesn't feel like help. Like, coming in second but only losing out by a nose, is the word like used in comparison. Watch. It's like getting one bar free. Cleans like a white tornado. It's like taking a trip to Portugal. And these are drawn from real ads of the day. Anyway, it goes through all of these words, and you can see it at work in every ad campaign. And he goes through others. There are various others, but it's completely disingenuous, completely misleading. And so that's what we see in America these days. Things that say things. There was one example that I had yesterday, and clearly it says something to people, but they don't mean that. Oh, it was a mattress ad. And I think, gosh, which one is it? I can't remember which mattress company, but the ad is, I can probably find it. Helps you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. Helps you fall asleep faster. And you can hear the spontaneous ambiguity in the ad. Because the question, obviously, as you and I know, is faster than what? Longer than what? I don't know. I see lots of stuff. Anyway, it's a commercial for one of the mattress companies. Helps you fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer. Helps you fall asleep faster than what? If you were laying on a bed of nails? Helps you stay asleep longer than what? If you were laying on a bed of nails? So, but the fallacious leap that your mind makes is to, well, it helps me fall asleep faster than I usually would, ordinarily, otherwise would, and stay asleep longer than I ordinarily otherwise would. That's not the claim they're making. It's ambiguity. And so we see this everywhere, in everything. And, you know, that includes in the military slogans. And let's not forget that as a result of the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, now propaganda, military propaganda, is sanctioned. We're not supposed to propagandize our own people. Really, we shouldn't propagandize anyone, but the CIA has been doing that for a long time. And we know that the mainstream press is complicit in that. We've, you know, known that. Our suspicions were confirmed, shall we say, when CIA Director William Colby admitted that the CIA has credentialed journalists on staff. But then, not long after that, William Colby met with an untimely death, which is interesting, and George H.W. Bush, as the head of the CIA, said, well, we won't do that anymore. We won't have credentialed journalists anymore. Which was worse, because now they feed stories through the wire services and, you know, often overseas to the same press outlets. But now it becomes more difficult to trace those stories back to their nefarious roots. I digress. So the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act says, well, you know, we can't be responsible for what pings off of foreign wire services or foreign news services back through social media in particular to the Heimatland, the homeland. So, you know, we might as well stop trying to filter out propaganda that bounces back from overseas. How about we just stop propagandizing people? Why is that necessary? It doesn't seem to be working. Do you feel safer? I certainly don't because of it. So, you know, intrigue and deception, manipulation, sophistry, lying to people doesn't make us safer. It doesn't make the world a better place. It just doesn't. And so that's what we're doing. And a large portion of that includes military propaganda. It was interesting. I mention it all the time. The PBS story, PBS ran the story about how the military was paying the NFL. It was a 2013 story. The military is paying the NFL to run patriotic, so-called, propaganda. Millions of dollars. That's why now all of a sudden the pledge is a controversy and, you know, are we going to stand? It's all that kind of stuff. That wasn't a thing very long ago. Remember? Suddenly that's a thing. Why is that a thing? I ask rhetorically. So let's see. Here it is. NewsHour. Report, Defense Department paid NFL millions of taxpayer dollars to salute troops. That was a May 10, 2015 story. It wasn't 2013. So Andrew Mock story on NewsHour. Report, Defense Department paid NFL millions of taxpayer dollars to salute troops. So how do you feel about that? You know, regardless of how you feel about the military, this is not a good thing. You start looking at all of this stuff, how we're propagandized from cradle to grave, really from womb to grave, because mom's listening to things. And so little boys get these little green army men, for example, and stuff like that. And then there's the cartoonization of stuff and the way that, you know, Hasbro and other toy manufacturers always work with the Defense Department. And these movies that come out that glamorize basically tyranny and oppression and awful things. And so people get sucked into this false sense of patriotism, when in reality, as Edward Abbey put it, a patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. We seem to have forgotten that. And how the militia was supposed to work until the regulars were commissioned if necessary. You know, state militias, separation of powers. Why? Because Lord Acton was right. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It doesn't matter what context or application, it happens. So the several state militias were supposed to, if there was an invasion, they were supposed to repel invasion until the regulars were convened. What were the regulars? And now we've institutionalized the regulars. What did the founders mean when they were talking about the regulars? And now instead of the regulars, we might as well call them the permanents, which is antithetical to our roots in America. The Constitution, the concepts that gave birth to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, this idea of separation of powers, checks and balances, not a centralized really sort of headless power, because you have the administrative branch that people don't realize exists, because you don't learn about that in so-called school. This headless fourth branch, the administrative fourth branch that was formalized by the passage of the Administrative Procedure Act back in 1946, when Senator Pat McCarran said on the Senate floor, "We have created a fourth branch." What did he mean? Did he mean it literally? Well, he clarified, and so he did very literally mean the fourth branch. Right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
All right, welcome back. So, a patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Like unto it, in a nation of sheep, one brave man forms a majority. Anyway, so wrote Edward Abbey. In a voice crying in the wilderness, Vox Clamantis in Deserto in 1990. Anyway, the question how to address war and the question of military service. You know, what do you do when someone asks, hey, what do you think about military service? Well, it's not an apples to apples conversation. You know, I mean, again, where do you start? How do you say, do you understand that the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, gives Congress the power and authority to declare war? The last time that happened was 1941, by the way. Do you realize that? Is that odd? Then why are we fighting all over the world? We are in 7 declared conflicts, theaters, it's theater, and again, JSOC and the Dirty Wars concept is being, you know, JSOC is gallivanting around the globe, poking the world in the nose, stimulating reactions in P2OG fashion, proactive preemptive operations group fashion. That's happening. Just because you don't hear about it on CNN doesn't make it any less real. Jeremy Scahill wrote the book Dirty Wars, and the resultant documentary film debuted at the Sundance Film Festival in 2013, and this continues to the chagrin of many of us. Anyway, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, Congress has the power and authority to declare war, to raise money and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So we have the National Security Act of 1947. Now we have the Department of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff. We have wonderful things like the Pentagon, the RAND Corporation, DARPA. You know, what was originally referred to as the National Military Establishment, the NME, the enemy, has been institutionalized. What the founders referred to as the regulars, now we might as well call the permanents. So do we understand that that is anathema to the Constitution? And do we understand why only an appropriation of 2 years? That what happens if a war lasts longer? Well, historically it doesn't. And this gets to why I think I have an answer for the question now. And for whatever reason, like I said, after Fred in Michigan's call on Friday, something clicked finally. And I have an answer. Madison, you know, read George Washington's farewell address in 1796. And it's brilliant. You can say whatever you want. You can say, I don't like that guy and he was an idiot or whatever. Or he was another racist, misogynistic white guy. But read his farewell address. And I dare say you will come away with a provocative new insight, particularly on the subject of war and peace. You know, basically, he's echoing the sentiment of the Bible in this context, saying, insofar as it be with you, be at peace with all men, and beware of the the ambitious in particular, you know, ambitious, corrupted, deluded, ambition, corruption, infatuation, you know, cunning, ambitious, unprincipled men. Combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. And who creates these popular ends? Are they engineered these days? Oh, we have to do something about this, like Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, ISIS, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, Nusra Front, Khorasan Group, whatever the flavor of the day is, all stem from the Mujahideen, the Salafi movement, which the CIA recruited back in the late 70s and into the 80s. So they created a problem and said, we got to do something about this. Washington in 1796 said, however combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely, in the course of time and things, to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. So basically, they're going to cross the bridge and burn it behind them. And we're seeing that, you know, the sort of John D. Rockefeller competition is a sin kind of mindset. But specifically, back to the question, you know, last thing. Madison, in his speech at the Constitutional Convention, June 29, 1787, this is what the father of the Constitution had to say. In time of actual war, great discretionary powers are constantly given to the executive magistrate. Constant apprehension of war, not war, constant apprehension of war. Where have we been in America for the last 100 or so years? Constant apprehension of war has the same tendency to render the head too large for the body. A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. On that note, we'll be right back. Stick around. More after the short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if
Bottom of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Monday, August 27th, 2018. Can you imagine what would happen if someone said, so what do you think about military service? And your answer was James Madison's statement at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. Well, my thoughts on military service are, you know, in time of actual war, great discretionary powers are constantly given to the executive magistrate. Constant apprehension of war has the same tendency to render the head too large for the body. A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. The means of defense against foreign danger have been always, not sometimes, always the instruments of tyranny at home. among the Romans, it was a standing maxim to excite war whenever a revolt was apprehended. Throughout all Europe, the armies kept up under the pretext of defending have enslaved the people. Can you imagine if you said something like that? Especially if you conclude with, among the Romans, it was a standing maxim to excite a war whenever a revolt was apprehended. You say something like that in a conversation today and people look at each other and go, yeah, this guy, hoo-hoo. I mean, you know, what is he talking about? Who is this guy? And yet, as you and I know, you go through that laundry list, so to speak, that James Madison mentions. In time of actual war, great discretionary powers are constantly given to the executive magistrate. Number one, actual war, time of actual war. Number two, constant apprehension of war has the same tendency to render the head too large for the body. So, time of actual war, constant apprehension of war, same thing. Same tendency, render the head too large for the body. Standing military force, what do we have? We've had time of actual war, we had the Great War, which what was so great about it 100 years ago, and not long after that, we have the Second World War. Conflicts everywhere, all over the place. We have these bodies, you know, the League of Nations, United Nations, supposedly convened so that we don't have the threat of war. And as Muammar Gaddafi put it in his, September 23rd, 2009, what I call 9/11 truth speech at the UN General Assembly, where he was scheduled to speak for 10 or 15 minutes and spoke for over 100. That's what he said. This body was supposedly convened so that we wouldn't have any more war. And look, we have more conflicts around the world than we've had in as long as we can remember. What happened? You know, the guy that the CIA was making deals with and then tried to steal all of Libya's natural resources and do all kinds of other awful things and then said, hey, look, this guy's doing bad stuff. And Gaddafi basically said, actually, you guys are the ones who brought me into these evil deals. So who's really the bad guy here? Anyway, time of actual war. Constant apprehension of war, both same thing, you know, tendency to render the head too large for the body. A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. Do we have that? So we've had time of actual war over the course of the 20th century, certainly. We've had constant apprehension of war. And, you know, you think of moments like the Senate committee to terminate the national emergency, and their report, Senate Report 93-549, Emergency Powers Statutes, provisions of federal law now in effect delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. Doesn't that sound exactly like what James Madison, the father of the Constitution, said? Report of the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency, United States Senate. And, you know, from there, you skip forward. I mean, it's almost like an unbroken line or chain. You know, James Madison says this at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. Then we have what we have, you know, coming out of the Lincoln era, the so-called Civil War, the uncivil war, War of Northern Aggression, or as I like to think of it, the War of Eastern European Banking Aggression. And because the Senate Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency says in their report, in the foreword to their report, you know, we've had national emergencies that effectively date back to the Lincoln era. We have a few on the books, but, you know, really, where is that? I don't remember exactly where it is. That's not it. Since March 9, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. In fact, there are now in effect four presidentially proclaimed states of national emergency. This was 1973. It's worse now. In addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933, there are also the national emergency proclaimed by President Truman on December 16, 1950, during the Korean conflict, and the states of national emergency declared by President Nixon on March 23, 1970, and August 15, 1971. These proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law, but as they pointed out and clarified later in the report, it was actually thousands. They just narrowed it down to these 470, and they leaned on the Air Force, which is the only body at the time that had the computing power to be able to dig through all of these statutes and laws and things that they wanted to assess and evaluate for this information. Anyway, these proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers ordinarily exercised by the Congress. Again, it reads like it was lifted right out of Madison's speech at the Constitutional Convention, or, you know, things that he'd written in the Federalist Papers, for example. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers ordinarily exercised by the Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. This isn't a conspiracy blog. This is the Senate, 1973. You know, the Senate, the United States Senate, 93rd Congress, first session, their report, 93-549. They wrote, "This vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes." This, under the powers delegated by these statutes, this is what the Senate concluded in 1973. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control transportation and communication, regulate operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. That doesn't sound fun. The Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency was created to examine the consequences of terminating the declared states of national emergency that now prevail, to recommend what steps the Congress should take to ensure that the termination can be accomplished without adverse effect upon the necessary task of governing, and also to recommend ways in which the United States can meet future emergency situations with speed and effectiveness, but without relinquishment of congressional oversight and control. Yeah, sophistry. It's all sophistry. Anyway, I wish I could remember where the... Yeah, I think from the beginning here. I think it's in here somewhere. So the introduction of the report, that was the foreword of the report. Here's an introduction from the beginning of the actual report. Introduction, a brief historical sketch of the origins of emergency powers now in force. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, this was 1973, for 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws, so-called. Ralph Winterode would probably dispute that turn of phrase there, use of words. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have in varying degrees been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. The problem of how a constitutional democracy reacts to great crises, however, far antedates the Great Depression. As a philosophical rule, its origins reach back to the Greek city-states and the Roman Republic. Gosh, again, it sounds like we're lifting from James Madison, doesn't it? And in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crises have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that this concept is antithetical to what the father of the Constitution and the sentiment of the day said and was, respectively. So what I was going to say is, it's like a thread, an unbroken thread, basically, from James Madison through the so-called Civil War era and the Reconstruction specifically. You know, you might as well throw in FM3-07, stability operations. So, you know, from Madison through the Civil War and the Reconstruction to Senate Report 93-549 to Bush 2 administration updating the CRS report, Congressional Research Service report, National Emergency Powers on September 18, 2001, 7 days, a week after September 11, 2001, conveniently referring to Senate Report 93-549. How convenient that they had that resource, eh? Right from the beginning, their use of it was disingenuous. In 1973, a Senate Special Committee studying emergency powers published a compilation identifying some 470 provisions. That's a complete adulteration of what took place. In 1973, a Senate Special Committee studying emergency powers. No, it was the committee to terminate the national emergency, the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency. That's what it was. And so the point here is that that study was used as a justification, one of the sort of central underlying justifications for the Bush 2 administration's authoritarian post 9/11 push. So you have Madison warning us. What comes out of the so-called Civil War, the Reconstruction era, and FM3-07 stability operations talks about that, and I've mentioned it before, specifically in Chapter 1. You know, go to Chapter 1 and just read what it says. Chapter 1, Strategic Context. The American experience with stability. During Reconstruction following the Civil War, military forces maintained order and provided security. These forces also initiated comprehensive measures to establish new state governments. What? Hold elections. What? And not much has changed these days. If you know what's happened in Afghanistan, for example, in the last 10 years, them having democratic elections for the first time in, well, ever, not much has changed. Since then, why do that? Because you can control people this way. How do we know? Because we have a proven history of, you know, doing it here. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but Flo Kennedy, Florence Kennedy, the Flo Kennedy Show, interviewed Jonathan Quitney in 1984, when Endless Enemies was first published. And And you'll never hear about that anywhere. I, you know, circling back around, after Fred in Michigan's call on Friday, something clicked. There are two books. I used to point to RL-33627, the Congressional Research Service report, NATO and Afghanistan, a test of the Transatlantic Alliance, but that just never seems to, it seems to fall on deaf ears. I have a better recommendation, and there's a concept. We suffer. We've been suffering for over 150 years in this country. I'll use a term. Maybe it's offensive. I didn't coin it, but see what you think. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested... Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com. We can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. So, you know, I've talked about folks like Mae Brussel. We shouldn't forget Mae Brussel or I put Shirley Chisholm in the same hold her in the same sort of high regard. Joan Vion, of course, more recently. But there's also Flo Kennedy, and you might not agree with her ideological bent or her politics, so to speak, sometimes, but you have to respect her intellect and her fiery disposition. So Sherry Randolph wrote a book, Florence Flo Kennedy, The Life of a Radical Black Feminist. Flo Kennedy was known for her cowboy hat and pink sunglasses in particular, but she was a very articulate and well-informed woman, graduated from Columbia Law School in 1951. Anyway, in Sherry Randolph's book, Florence Flo Kennedy, The Life of a Radical Black Feminist, she quotes Flo Kennedy saying, and so this isn't my term, it's Flo Kennedy's term, but I agree, and you think about what's going on today and how long this has been going on. I've been, you know, I have a note with the question, can I say this word, from months ago? Because this is how it feels, you know, and when Garrett Coleman was on last, this was sort of what was in view in my mind. Anyway, Sherry Randolph quotes Flo Kennedy as saying, my main message is that we have a pathologically, institutionally racist, sexist, classist society, and that niggerizing techniques that are used don't only damage black people, but they also damage women, gay people, ex-prison inmates, prostitutes, children, old people, handicapped people, Native Americans. And that if we can begin to analyze the pathology of oppression, we would learn a lot about how to deal with it. And it doesn't just injure those, you know, less fortunate, disenfranchised, so to speak, that she sort of hinted at, in my opinion. It injures us all. And it's not something we all come by naturally. Watch children playing. That's what she described is not a natural phenomenon. It's anything but this sort of, you know, sclerotic vitriol and dehumanization that we all experience and witness in America these days. It's the sort of thing that Jordan Peterson's been talking about lately. You know, we're all brutal, tyrannical, awful people in a sense, as Jordan Peterson talks about. You know what? When you look at Stalinist Russia or Nazi Germany, what were they like? Like Jordan Peterson says, they were like you and me on some level. So that's the danger. And when forces start to draw that out in us all, we are in trouble. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just two bottles, a four-month supply. I take Extendivite three times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.